Hello, wine world. Thaddeus Bugs with the Minority Wine Report and the podcast Wine in Black and White. I have the privilege of talking to Robert Britton of Britton Vineyards in Oregon. He's done a lot of work in this world. He's very well educated, and I think he has a great philosophy on making wine. And it's going to be a very interesting conversation. It might get a little, it's going to be educational, but it might get a little bit on the high end of trying of understanding grape growing, making wines, and the whole deal. So anyway, Robert Britton from the Vineyards, Britton Vineyards. Welcome to the podcast, Wine in Black and White. How are you doing today in South Florida?
There you go. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's a great day. It's a little bit overcast, and everybody's worried about how cold it is. Hell, I'm from Oregon. This is a hot day for me. This is gorgeous.
No, man, I'm telling you, we've not had typical Florida weather these last couple of weeks, so it's been untypical for this time of year. The Floridians are a little spoiled.
I mean, you don't have to put on a puffer coat to eat lunch at 63 degrees, my friend.
So Robert, let's start with this. I would like to start with the intro as far as your background and all of that, but I'm gonna switch it up a little bit to a question that I've asked a few people that's been in the Oregon wine world and also in the Burgundy wine world. Both make Pinot Noir, both make Chardonnays. So. And it's not a trick question at all. In your opinion, if you have there's Grand Cru in Burgundy, and I don't think there's Grand Cru in Oregon.
Not yet.
But what do you think is the main reason that's not at that point right now?
Because we haven't been making Pinot Noir in Oregon for 300 years. We have been making in the northern Willamette Valley, which is the area where I work. We have been making Pinot Noir based wines for about 60 years. So we're talking one generation, right? Now the great thing here is that a lot of the winemakers and people working in Oregon now, like myself, have come from somewhere else. So I worked in California, particularly in Napa Valley, for 25 years before I came to Oregon. You know, some of the French winemakers that we have working in Oregon today came from Burgundy and have been well-known winemakers in Burgundy before coming to Oregon. Those things, plus the incredible support and willingness to share amongst the originators who started the Oregon movement.
I told you guys this is going to get a little deep in nature, but no, that's what I want.
The originators, you know, we're just now starting to lose them. We're talking about people like David Lett, who was the first person to plant, you know, Pinot Noir in the Dundee Hills. And he's gone. His son runs Irie Vineyard these days. But these guys started, David Adelsheim, who's still with us. These guys, the Ponzi's, these people, these the Focal Blossers. These guys and their wives, they were ready to admit they didn't know what they didn't know, right? Mm-hmm. And so they were like, hey, this is what I read, or this is what I tried. This is how it worked. I mean, they shared their mistakes, they shared their successes. And in fact, I would argue that Oregon Pinot Noir today, which I believe Oregon Pinot Noir and Chardonnay are probably the best New World versions of those two grapes, are grown and produced in Oregon now, are where they are because of altruism, because of this willingness to support and help each other. And so you add to that then the influx of talented winemakers from other places who were intrigued and challenged by the opportunity in Oregon. And all of a sudden you've got this very, very, very rich mix, and the wines speak for themselves.
So I would agree with you. I think Oregon is the other than Burgundy and maybe a couple other places, maybe in Baden in Germany, maybe Central Otago, is probably the best place Pinot's being grown mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So going back to my original question, mm-hmm. and I'll preface it this way. In growing Grand Cru, if you have Grand Cru Burgundy, which mm-hmm. most of it is grown on limestone, and Oregon doesn't have limestone, does that influence how, if Oregon can get to the Grand Cru status?
So, I'm going to back up just
a little
bit.
We're getting a little technical now. My listeners, just stay with me a little bit.
All right. So, Grand Cru exists because for years, those areas were identified as making a superior product. That's the purpose and the understanding of Grand Cru. Not so much as, this is the soil type, but these were the best wines consistently being made, right? And then it turned out with understanding and science, it turns out, the soil actually is very important. And not just the soil, but where on the slope you are, so it's a very complex situation, and you find Grand Crus across, more than just in across many villages, not just in one, right? Mm-hmm. So Oregon, we just aren't quite there yet in that we don't have that history of making wines from these vineyards and saying, this is the Grand Cru of Oregon. Mm-hmm. There are people who make that claim already, but I would say at this point it's still premature. It's certainly not going to happen in my lifetime, and it shouldn't happen in my children's lifetime.
All right, Robert, let's digress a little bit mm-hmm. back. Give us a little bit about your background. I know you're mm-hmm. a graduate of UC Davis, and you also worked at Farniente.
I did.
I had the privilege of meeting Gil Nichols, mm-hmm. his wife, and I'm still good friends with his son, Jeremy Nichols.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so take us through your background.
So I started fermenting grapes in my dorm room. I was finishing a degree in physics.
This is at UC Davis.
This was before I went to Davis.
So already fermenting grapes in the dorm room?
Right, because I was trying to get dates. So, back in the late 60s, early 70s, if you were a physics major, you didn't stand a chance in hell of getting a date, right? Because women didn't appreciate nerds. They were made way more discerning than they are today. So the guys across the hall from me in the dorm had a pot still, and they had lots of female companionship. And so I thought, well, maybe if I could produce alcohol somewhere, and I couldn't afford a still.
I'm listening.
And this is the point. This is true. It's embarrassing, but true. And I think it's funny now. At this point in my winemaking career, my father passed away unexpectedly, and I found myself back in the Central Valley of California, where I was born and raised. And a good friend of the family approached me about working in a lab at a large growers co-op. I did that, really thinking I could learn a little something about making wine